Hello, it is February 23rd, 2015. You are looking live at Iowa City, Iowa. This is episode 461 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. First off, I apologize. It has been a while. It's actually been since right before the Super Bowl that we've had a podcast. And for there are two reasons for that. One is my general how overwhelming the Super Bowl is. I took a trip to New York right after that and did all that work, and as you know, I'm running like 10 things a week now, so it's difficult sometimes to fit it in, particularly in the wake of the Super Bowl. The second reason for that, and this is probably more of a housekeeping issue for you, this podcast is going to go, I think, during the baseball season, all baseball. Now, I don't know, that may bother some of you, and that may please some of you, and you may not care, though if you don't care, you're probably not listening in the first place. But, you know, I'm a big fan of baseball podcasts. I'm a daily listener to the Effectively Wild podcast, Baseball Perspectives podcast. So I heard they had an announcement on their show Friday, so one I haven't heard, the Orioles show, so maybe this announcement will make their announcement will make whatever I'm saying moot. But as for really great, consistent baseball podcasts, you know, since Randy Gisarelli and Joe Sheehan's podcast went away, since the Baseball Today podcast with Eric Carabel, Keith Law, and Mark Simon, since that went away, and I like Buster Olney as much as anyone, but that show's not a podcast. That show is a weird, truncated version of the TV show, which I don't know if necessarily as great as Buster Olney is. It's nice that some of the guests on there are. I'm not sure that's a podcast either. I decided to do a baseball podcast. For crying out loud, Sports North is owned by MLB.com. It seems the least I can do to maybe have one thing that I do that's solely baseball related. So I think I'm going to do a regular co-host on that rather than just have a new person. Sometimes I'm sure we'll bring people in. I am taking suggestions. I have a few ideas because I have a few feelers out, but if there's anyone you think would make that who you particularly enjoy their baseball mind and is both not doing a podcast now and has interest in doing so, please email me at leach@sportsonearth.com or just hit me on Twitter at William F. Leach and perhaps we'll come up with someone. But until the baseball season starts, we're going to do some of my favorite guests that I've had on to talk about a few things. We'll still, by the way, once the baseball podcast gets going, we'll still do certain shows, the Jeb Lund Thanksgiving show. It was a tradition until I didn't do it last year, but it's going to be a tradition again. Tommy Craig's over to holidays. Certainly Matt Norlander talking college basketball. We're still going to have some of our regular people on non-things, but we're just going to concentrate on making this a baseball-only podcast because with occasional interruptions and additions just for fun, boni, is that the plural of bonus? I don't think it is. Anyway, we'll be doing a lot of those, but we're going to make it a baseball podcast because I feel like there is a lack of really great baseball podcasts now. MLB.com actually does some very good ones. They have Anthony Castrovince and Matthew Leach and other guys hosting, talking to a lot of the team correspondents that are very good. It's called MLB.com Extras. That's really good. I subscribe to that. But I feel like a weekly actual conversation between two people who follow a lot of baseball and have a lot to say on baseball, probably run on Mondays, that seems like something that we should do. So I'm going to be doing that. I'm taking your suggestions on who we should get. So that's another reason for the delays. I've been working on that. But I do want you to tell me if there's anyone you'd like to hear. Until then, though, as I said, we'll be having some of my favorite guests, and one of my absolute favorite guests that I've had on. One of the sad things about living in Athens, almost everything else I love about Athens. By the way, I'm in Iowa City because I'm spoiling the young minds of Iowa, the University of Iowa journalism students and writing students this week. I'm out there all week. I'm going to the Illinois-Iowa game with my father on Wednesday night, which is probably the real reason for the trip. But I'm going to be there all week. So if you are in Iowa City, stop by a journalism class and you'll hear the snores of students listening to me prattle on about, this is what Deadspin was like back in 2006. There'll be a lot of that. Anyway, finally to the intro of this podcast, one of my favorite guests. I don't get, here in Athens, I do not get NBA TV, much to my frustration, on Charter. But I still subscribe and have subscribed to the podcast for 6 years, 7 years now. The Basketball Jones, used to be Basketball Jones, now is, of course, The Starters on NBA TV. It's a great show. They were just profiled in the New York Times. So there's bunch of great Canadians who were plucked out of their podcast and given a show on NBA TV, and the Times is on it. Anyway, so one of the co-hosts of the show is Lee Ellis. He is my guest today. He's going to talk about the trade deadline of the NBA and preview. Really kind of the thing about the trade deadline and the All-Star break is it happens so late in the year. We're practically in the home stretch now. So we're going to look forward to see what we're kind of glancing at and talk all sorts of NBA basketball with him. We will be doing the trivia. We probably will not be doing trivia once we start doing baseball again. Though, of course, we can toss those in occasionally as well if someone wants to do them, or if you feel like you will really miss them, please let me know. But until then, this has been 5 minutes of housekeeping. Now to the actual show with the great and awesome Lee Ellis. All right, Lee, first off, thank you for coming on with me. I know that it's been an exhausting week. You were in New York for the All-Star game. Was this your first All-Star game?
No, my fourth, actually. I've been fortunate enough to be there since Orlando. I went to Houston and then New Orleans last season. So this one was the fourth one, and probably the most exciting and the most fun one, although the weather was easily the worst. This is the first cold climate one I've been to. And, you know, it's a funny thing about New York. I don't think there's ever a bad time to go to New York. It's such an amazing city and an amazing place to go. But it was probably tested last weekend because it was pretty cold and windy and, you know, snow came down and everything. But, you know, it's one of those places. It's always great to visit. And the All-Star weekend, I really enjoy it because you do really get to see the best of the NBA on display. And we had a lot of fun. We did a show there at the Sheraton Hotel on Friday night, and then we did a few other bits and pieces around the city. And yeah, Madison Square Garden is one of those arenas. You know, some say it's the most famous in the world, and you know, certainly in the top two or three. And Trey Kirby and I actually did a live hit from there for NBA TV on Sunday night just before the game, and that was pretty big thrill for me, pretty exciting, you know, from a career perspective to actually be live at Madison Square Garden doing it was only a brief 3 or 4 minute hit, but very, very exciting and very fulfilling from a career point of view.
Yeah, and listen, and you know, one of the things I love at All-Star Weekend too is, you know, everybody's generally there, like, you know, and not only that, but like, it's always amazing that like, it's kind of sad that maybe the last thing Chris Bosh did this year was win the skills challenge. Like, this is a Hall of Famer doing like this, like, you know, what is the Shooting Stars? The Shooting Stars competition.
The Shooting Stars. Yeah. The Shooting Stars. He's great at it, though. That's the thing. Chris Bosh, you know, he's such a charismatic guy. I mean, he's one of those guys who gets kind of picked on in the media a little bit, but he's actually, he kind of embraces that sort of that dorkiness that he has. And he's so watchable. You know, you always want to see what he does because he does something that's gif-able, or certainly it's on a Vine or whatever through the internet. And, you know, he's actually really good at how he approaches that Shooting Stars. I mean, a lot of guys go up there with that half-court shot and they just kind of throw it at the hoop. He actually basically just puts a little bit more on it than what he would normally put on a three-point shot, and he's very successful at it. And obviously the news that he's in the hospital right now with possible clots in his lungs is not very nice to hear, and hopefully everything goes well with him. And you realise that basketball doesn't really mean that much when someone has such a nasty injury or a health concern like he has right now. And hopefully, obviously, you know, he just comes back and he becomes the guy and the player that we've known over these last 10 or 11 years, because he is a Hall of Famer. He's a fantastic player. And, you know, we wish him all the best.
Yeah, I think that certainly having that happen on the heels of Jerome Kersey, I think kind of sprung everyone a little bit more to attention on that. I think that scared everybody a little bit more than it even might have if it hadn't come right on the heels of Jerome Kersey dying. The last thing I want to say about All-Star Weekend, you guys are NBA employees, you're NBA Turner employees. You guys are in there. You're with Barkley. You're with Shaq and those guys. When are I figure Skeets may have to be the first one in the celebrity game. Kevin Hart's out. I know I know Skeets has campaigned for it for a long time. I know that I think there's spots for all you guys. When is it going to happen? I have to say, it feels like it's time.
Well, next year is in Toronto, the All-Star Weekend. So if it doesn't happen then, I think it might not happen. But yeah, you're right. Skeets is definitely the one. He's been campaigning for a few years now, and you know, anyone who's ever played with him knows he's got a pretty good game. He's pretty quick. He can pull up and hit that jump shot. So it's not like it'd be just a token invite. He would be a player who actually would contribute, and he would try as good as he can. And yeah, it would be great. It would be great for us to see at least one of us play there anyway. I mean, you know, I think all four of us would love to play. But, you know, I mean, you can't really give four spots, I guess, to one sort of representation. So, and Kristen Ledlow also from NBA TV, she's played in the last couple of years, so I expect she'll play in another couple. But, yeah, Skeets, you know, I know that he would love to get out there on that stage and show what he can do, because, you know, we're all we're all basketball fans and we all love this game so much. And, you know, none of us have played at the professional level, but we've all played basketball. We all, you know, would love that opportunity to get out there and perform in front of the crowd.
Yeah, the last thing on this, Skeets came up last year for a Georgia football game with me, and he very briefly, because one thing about Skeets is you know, working with him, he's unusually charismatic. I think in like a casual world, and so he met my son, for my 3-year-old son, maybe for 2 or 3 minutes, and he still asks about him. We don't even get NBA TV. Like, he's not like I have to listen to you guys on the podcast. He doesn't see you, but he still constantly asks about him all the time. He has forgotten my name, but he asks about him all the time.
I've got a 2.5-year-old, and actually, he's pretty good with him as well. Like, he always sees him, and he's always got a big smile for him, and you know, lots of energy. And and Sebastian, my son, you know, he does remember him as well. He calls him Uncle Skeets. So he must have something with kids. Maybe he should get one of his own one day.
My son calls him Dad. I actually don't know what that's about, but let's just move along from that. Okay, obviously this was the craziest trade deadline, though. It's weird. It's a different experience, the trade deadline, when, you know, I made a little rule for myself about a year ago, just so I could get more stuff done, that I would try to spend a little less time on Twitter. And I mostly use Twitter to just like promote my stuff now, which is an annoying way to do it, but also allows me to actually create things at a rate that I wouldn't be able to otherwise. So when you're not on Twitter during the deadline, you just like, you pop in like an hour later and everyone is just looks like they were in a bar fight. Like everyone's just falling apart. Like, I can't believe we went through that. And I'm just like, oh yeah, that's an interesting transaction. Oh yeah, cool. Yeah. Looks busy. And you guys are all like, have pulled all of your hair out for an hour. When you take a look, obviously you've talked about on your own show, kind of the ramifications of the trade deadline and what happened. To me, like, it certainly looked fun. It certainly looks like it was, I think that there was some, Phoenix was particularly entertaining and so on, but it doesn't look to me, save for maybe Portland kind of shoring up the bench a little bit, it doesn't look like any of those trades are going to have an effect on this year's title race.
Well, I guess in that respect, you could look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they basically knew that Reggie Jackson wasn't signing there, so they had to do something. And in return, they got DJ Augustin and Kyle Singler from the Detroit Pistons, and they also moved Kendrick Perkins to Utah for Enes Kanter and Steve Novak. And I actually think they did pretty well out of that, because DJ Augustin, the thing with Reggie Jackson was that he was a guy who felt that he's a starter in this league, which is fine. I mean, a lot of players have that belief in themselves. But it was becoming a problem in the locker room that he felt that he wasn't being given the respect that he deserved. And now Sam Presti's gone out and got a backup point guard in DJ Augustin, who absolutely knows his role. He is a backup. He's going to come off the bench. He's going to be a guy who is capable of hitting the three-point. He's capable of scoring. He's a very, very good player, but he understands that he's not a starting point guard in this league. And they've also got Kyle Singler, who he's a capable shooter. And then also the big move was getting Enes Kanter from the Utah Jazz, because Kendrick Perkins has been a good player for the Oklahoma City Thunder, but skillfully he's just not quite there. I mean, offensively he doesn't really give you much other than setting a few screens. Defensively he's a good body, he's a big body with a big presence, but he's just not that guy. He's not really a rim protector, and he's just not really a sort of guy who can impact the game that much. Whereas Enes Kanter, he offensively, he's a lot more gifted. He's got that mid-range jump shot. He can move with it back to the basket as well if needed. And I think that with the Oklahoma City Thunder in the position they're in, they're likely going to finish no higher than seventh in the Western Conference. But they're going to be just as much of a threat, in my opinion, as any other team in that West to make the finals, because they've got the two superstars, obviously, in Durant and Westbrook. They've got that third star in Serge Ibaka. And now they've just shored up their bench. So I think that they probably came away with this with the most impact for their team that really could affect them in the playoffs. You mentioned Dragic has gone there to Miami. I think that's going to improve Miami, but I don't think Miami's going to get anywhere beyond the second round at best this season. They gave away basically their bench to get a better player, which is fine. You know, you want to get quality players, but they've got such a small range there that if something goes wrong, as we've seen now with Chris Bosh, that it really makes it some stuff for them. So, you know, there was so much movement, but, you know, you look at the Golden State Warriors, you look at the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies did make a move not too long ago to get Jeff Green. And then in the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they'd already made their moves. The Atlanta Hawks felt they didn't need to make any, and even the Raptors didn't make any moves. So the teams at the very tops of each conference had either already done their business prior to the trade deadline, or they didn't feel there's anything that was out there that was really going to turn the needle for them come playoff time. So, you know, these other teams kind of shuffling players around. You know, the Phoenix Suns getting Brandon Knight is a good replacement for Goran Dragic, but we know that the Suns, even if they make the playoffs, which now it seems even less likely, they were never really going to threaten too much out in the West. So they're probably looking more long-term. And the Milwaukee Bucks, I was surprised that they did trade away Brandon Knight, because I thought that having such a good season, Brandon Knight's been fantastic. He was probably the next guy into the All-Star game in the East if there was an injury. And they traded him away, which I didn't think was a great move. But instead, they got Michael Carter-Williams from Philadelphia, who, you know, people are making the comparison, he's a Jason Kidd-type point guard. But I really think that the Bucks should have just stood firm where they were and gone with the team that's got them to this point in the Eastern Conference, because, you know, the Eastern Conference, even though the Cavs and the Bulls and the Hawks are teams that we expect will be in the conference finals, the Bucks could have really developed this season and really got some good experience in the playoffs with those younger guys like Giannis. You know, John Henson's another one, and just built towards the future. But I think they took a little step back there by taking Michael Carter-Williams. But, you know, it was a great day. It was a fun day. We, you know, yeah, everything seemed to happen at sort of 2:55, you know, 5 minutes before the deadline. We didn't know who was going where. No one knew where Norris Cole was going. Isaiah Thomas at one stage was going to Philadelphia, apparently, and then he was in Boston. And it was so hard to keep up. Even Adrian Wojnarowski, the fantastic Yahoo sports writer, even he was overwhelmed by it. He tweeted out, good Lord. So, it was certainly one of the most fun deadlines that I've been involved in, and you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. But I think Oklahoma City probably were the team that came away the best overall.
All right, so now one last question on the trade deadline, and then I want to go through each conference and talk about contenders, potential contenders in each conference. But the last question on the trade deadline, because obviously the one I think that there's one team that. The internal intrigue that surrounds them is Philadelphia. I have an ongoing debate with Tom Lee, a Deadspin. Actually, I'm not even sure it's debate. He just writes things. I yell at him and he ignores me. And the general company line over there is, this is a travesty what Philadelphia is doing. And I think they ran, I thought, a very funny piece after the trade deadline saying that, like, listen, the 76ers have done everything they can with this team. It was time for them to blow it up, which I thought was very funny. But nevertheless, I tend to go for the idea that, you know, Michael Carter-Williams was probably not going to be one of the stars on whatever next great 76ers team there is. And sure, you can argue they're just kicking the can farther and farther down. But that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it would be, actually, they are maximizing, like, they're not wasting time with marginal talents. Like, the whole goal is to build all this together. And so if it means trading a guy that maybe, or the second round, the second round guy's name? KJ McDaniels?
McDaniels, yeah.
Yeah. Like those guys, you know, they're great, but like they're surprising guys, but they're probably not members of that next championship team, or they're not going to be able to sign them in a way that's beneficial for them. So why waste time? If this whole thing is about building a championship team, why waste time? Even if you have these small positive increments like you have, like Carter Williams and McDaniels, why waste time with those guys? Continue to bring more guys in to get that championship down the line. Which side do you fall on that?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest, because I don't like having, you know, so openly just saying, listen, we just want to lose as many games as possible and get as high a draft pick as possible. Like, I understand that you're right. You need to get a LeBron James in the draft. You know, it's no good getting a Michael Carter-Williams, who was Rookie of the Year, in a bad class when he's not the sort of guy who's going to turn your franchise around. But the only problem is, you know, the LeBron James don't come around that often. You know, we've had a Derrick Rose, we've had a Dwight, Blake Griffin, those sort of guys. I mean, they do pop up, but it's kind of like you're saying, okay, the only way we can win is if we get a superstar, rather than, well, we've had a lot of high draft picks over the last couple of years. Surely if we get all these guys in the top five together, we can build something there. Because if you're a fan of Philadelphia, you know, why would you bother paying your money to go and watch a game these days, unless you wanted to watch LeBron James? Because it's kind of insulting, I think, to the fans to say, listen, we're going to build this as slowly and as methodically as possible, and doesn't matter how long it takes. Because at the end of the day, you know, you want to see your team competing every year. And I know that people will say, you know, you don't want to be in that no-man's land of finishing just inside the playoffs but then getting killed in the first round. or finishing just outside of the playoffs and getting a pick, you know, around say 9 or 10, that someone may not, you know, be that franchise changing player. It's got a bad stench to it, I think, and you know, it's kind of hard. You do lose a little bit of respect for the franchise because they're not really making any genuine attempt at the moment to win these games. They're just trying to stockpile as many top two or three draft picks as they can, and you just don't know when it's going to pay off. You know, I've mentioned on the show before, the problem with, you can ask fans to be patient and it doesn't really matter, but when you ask NBA professional players to be patient, I think at some stage that's going to come back to haunt you, because professional athletes, as you know, they're not patient people. They want to win every year. They want to compete. They're not the sort of people who you can say, okay, you have to wait 5 years and then we're going to compete. So if you've got a guy like Nerlens Noel, who apparently is one of the guys they want to build around, very good defensive player, not particularly a great offensive player at this stage of his career, but by the time it gets to the end of his rookie contract after 4 seasons, he might have only won 50 games. And that's got to leave a bad taste in your mouth, where he's to the point where he's saying, listen, I want out of this situation. I want out of this city. I want to go and have a chance to win. Whereas the franchise is going to come back and say, yeah, you just have to wait another 3 or 4 years until we start getting better. So that I think, is the risk you take, is that you might actually alienate your own players that you are trying to build around, because you're asking them to just be horrible for a couple of years. And I don't think players like that. And, you know, KJ McDaniels is a good example. They wanted to sign him to a longer contract, being a second-round pick. But he said, no, I only want to play for 1 year, sign a one-year contract and show my market value and hopefully get a bigger offer somewhere else. And he was playing really well for them, you know, blocking shots, dunking, running the break, getting out there. So they ended up trading into the Houston Rockets. And now KJ McDaniels is going to be a free agent at the end of this season, and he's going to look for bigger money elsewhere. So it's almost like, if you come to Philadelphia at the moment, they don't want you to play as hard as you can. They want you to go out there and sort of toe the company line. And when someone like KJ McDaniels doesn't really do that, they can ship you out and get rid of you. So I just wish they weren't so open about how they're doing it. But I guess the flip side to that is, let's say they get the next LeBron James, and then they get another LeBron James in the following draft, and then they, in 5 years' time, let's say they're competing for a championship, and they're competing for the next 3 or 4 years, then I guess it will be worth it. But where we sit right now today, it's very, very hard to see that happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, I'm not a professional athlete, at least not in basketball. I'm professional in all sorts of sports that, you know, you don't watch them, but trust me, they're huge. I feel like I'd rather play for Philadelphia than say Brooklyn. Because Brooklyn is a team that is really kind of going nowhere. Like Brooklyn is doomed for the next 3 years the way that Philadelphia is doomed for the next 3 years, except there's no plan for Brooklyn for the next 3 years. To me, like, I know it's hard to say it's an easier thing to say as a fan than it is as a player, but certainly you at least want to sense there's some sort of direction to this. The example I would use a baseball example would be Justin Verlander of Detroit. This was a rookie who was terrible. This is a guy that was like came in for a terrible team, and then by the time that they got good, he had earned it because he'd been on these terrible teams and been that time. I feel like that's better than just farting around with Brooklyn and whatever mess they're going to have for the next 3 years.
Yeah, and he ended up with Kate Upton, so it was a pretty good win-win
situation. That's true. Just careful with your phone. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Brooklyn is an interesting situation because at the time they made that huge trade to get Pierce and Garnett over from the Boston Celtics, and Joe Johnson from the Hawks as well. At least what I thought then was, you have an owner, Mikhail Prokhorov, who's like, listen, I want to win, I'm going all in, I don't care about the money, I'm trying to do everything I can. Now, we knew it was a huge risk at the time because they were giving up so much of their future, and it didn't work. But at least at the time, you as a player felt that the owner really desperately wants to win. Now, they're paying for it now, and when you look at it now, Prokhorov has been one of the, you know, he's been a very hands-off owner. He doesn't really attend games, and he's already looking to sell, apparently. And he's been the sort of guy who's just thrown money at the situation, hoping it'll work, and it hasn't. But, yeah, now Brooklyn, their future isn't very bright at all. They are looking, you know, they don't have their own draft picks. You know, they're heavily capped out already as well. And they've got players like Deron Williams, who's well and truly past his best. Brook Lopez, you know, there's still some interest in him. And, of course, Jay Johnson as well. But they carry such big contracts, teams are sort of reluctant to take those guys on. But, yeah, they're certainly going to be in for a tough couple of years, that's for sure. But at the time, what they did, you know, it was short-sighted and risky, but I still feel at least the ownership was intention was to try to win the championship, and they gambled heavily and they lost. Philadelphia is doing the same sort of thing in a different way. They're gambling heavily that they're going to get these fantastic draft picks that are going to turn out for them. And if they lose, it really, you know, it's really going to set the franchise back. And I don't know. It's just, I don't think we've ever seen a team openly tank for so many consecutive years like they are right now. And I think that's turning a few people off. And Adam Silver himself, I mean, you know, the commissioner, he's talking about lottery reform because, you know, the reward for losing is too great right now. And I think they want to try to even that out. But, you know, look, it, you know, Trey mentioned on our show, it's a great experiment by the Sixers for sure. And if they end up becoming successful from it, then they'll be the ones who sit back and say it was all worth it. But I think if they don't, and if in 3 or 4 years' time they're still, you know, hovering around the bottom and they still don't seem to have direction, and maybe they've traded another one of these high draft picks, then you're just probably going to have that sigh of like, just like, what are they doing here? And it's time for a new direction.
All right. Well, let's not talk about the lame teams. Let's talk about the ones that have a chance to win. And one of the things, let's start with the Western Conference. One of the things that's fun. Actually, let's start with the Eastern Conference, because the Western Conference is going to take a little longer. To me, you know, is it accurate to say that there are three teams that have legitimate chance? Maybe if you maybe Toronto, if you squint a little bit, they seem to have the Hawks number anyway. Maybe three teams in the East have a chance to win the title: Atlanta, Chicago, Cleveland. Would you include Toronto? Would you include Washington in that? Or are we just looking at those three?
I wouldn't include Washington. I think they're not ready yet. I think they could be in another year or two, but they've been, with Bradley Beal's injury has kind of disabled them a little bit this season. We haven't seen their best performance. And Nene is one of those guys, so frustrating. He can be so good, but he just drifts in and out. So I don't think Washington's ready. You know, if we'd had this conversation before last night's game, I would have said, you know, the Raptors probably aren't in that sort of top three group. But, I mean, they absolutely smoked Atlanta last night at home and just destroyed them, which was incredible. And I think that's 3-1 now in the season series for Toronto. So you have to sort of put them in the mix. Chicago, you know, a lot of people still have Chicago as the favorite in the Eastern Conference, but I'm not as sold on them. I just don't think that they're ready this season. They seem to be a little bit, they're a very hard team to figure out. You know, they can go and beat the Golden State Warriors in Golden State and then lose to the Lakers a night later. So they're one of those teams that I'm not sure they can string together consistent basketball in the playoffs to go all the way. And I also think it doesn't help that there's obviously friction between Tom Thibodeau and the front office there, to the point where if the Bulls don't make the Eastern Conference Finals at worst, I think Thibodeau's out of a job there. I think that's been bubbling under the surface for a couple of years, and I think that this year, obviously with Derrick Rose back, they've had Pau Gasol, they've got a very good team. I think the front office might say, right, you had the chance this year and you're done. But, you know, the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers really, for me, are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, and I think that, you know, despite last night's, you know, horrible loss to Toronto, the way the Atlanta Hawks have been playing to this point has been fantastic. You know, really sharing the ball, not relying on one guy necessarily or one play to score all their points. Everyone gets involved. Kyle Korver, what he does for their offense is just fantastic. You know, he doesn't even need to have the ball in his hands, and it just causes chaos for other teams defending him, because you know that if he does get the ball, chances are the shot's going in. And they've got other guys, you know, Jeff Teague's been fantastic. Al Horford's been great. Dennis Schroeder off the bench has been really, really good for them. And they've been playing to the point where it's not just an anomaly to see them playing this well. They've deserved to be where they are in the Eastern Conference. They play fantastic defense. They play really, really eye-pleasing, pleasing to the eye to watch offense. You know, like the ball moves around and they get a lot of open shots. But the Cleveland Cavaliers, I mean, where they are right now must be pretty intimidating for the other teams, because, you know, they were at one stage 19 and 20 when LeBron was out with the back injury and the sort of leg injury. He just basically needed a rest. And I think he's come back from that rejuvenated. Obviously, the trades help as well. They've added Iman Shumpert, J.R. Smith, and Timofey Mozgov. And right now, the Cavs, since they were 19 and 20, I think they're 15 and 3 or something around that mark since then. And they've just been playing that basketball that we thought they were going to play from the start of the season. And LeBron, it's not like LeBron's going yet and scoring 45 every night either. Kyrie Irving's been playing well. J.R. Smith has been really good for them too. You know, I think he might be in a situation that works for him, because in New York, he was basically their second option, and he's not that type of guy. He's more a guy, come off the bench, get some shots, get some open looks. And, you know, he's a streaky shooter, we know that. But when he gets going, like he has been right now, the Cavs are a very formidable team. And obviously, when you've just got LeBron there, LeBron, he's won everything, he's experienced enough, you know, he's still strong and big, and he can do everything. It's not like, you know, even though he's old for a 30-year-old or so, this is, you know, what, his 11th season now, he's still got enough in him that, you know, that he's still pretty much the best player in the league. So I think the Cavs are certainly, you know, back in that sort of top two conversation. But the way the Hawks have been playing, I think that series, if those two were to meet in the conference finals, I think it would definitely go 6 or 7 games. But right now, I guess I would probably just put Cleveland slightly ahead of them, simply because of the LeBron factor. And, you know, he's been there, he's won it. He knows what it takes to win in the playoffs. And, you know, he's motivated. He desperately wants this championship for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So either way, you know, like, the best thing about this season is we don't know. And that's great, because in years gone by, you know, been Miami. Everyone sort of felt they're the favourite. And this year, we really don't know. And that makes it great for neutral basketball fans. It makes it great for non-neutral basketball fans, because we all feel, and I think all these teams, Atlanta, Toronto, Chicago, Cleveland, I think they all feel that if things go right, they could definitely be in the conference finals at worst and championship round, if, again, you know, if one or two things go their way.
Yeah, certainly. And I just kind of want to close on the Eastern Conference with Atlanta, because really, like, you know, I think ESPN picked them 41-41, and people saw them as frankly, like every Atlanta Hawks team of the last 15 or 20 years, around a 7 or 8 seed, 500 team. And it's funny, like, obviously, you know, they had some offseason ugliness, but, you know, the foundation of this, kind of that San Antonio crew in exile, I suppose, they were probably building the foundation for this. But is this the start of something for them, or are they just kind of catching fire? Or are they just kind of catching lightning right now?
Well, it's going to be interesting, because Paul Millsap, who's been an all-star in his 2 years in Toronto, is a free agent at the end of his season. So, you know, those are the sorts of things that will they pay him? Will the ownership feel that he's worth, you know, the big bucks, or will they let him walk? And that could be one of the determining factors. Are they just having a hot season right now, or is this the start of something that we might see for the next 3 or 4 years? I mean, Kyle Korver, as great as he is and as great as he's been, he's 33 as well. Al Horford's in, I think, his 8th year it is now. So, you know, guys are getting to that stage of their career where this is where they want to win. They're in that opportunity now. They've got a good, solid base. They've got a good coach in Mike Budenholzer. So you hope that they can keep it together and keep this unit together, because, you know, as you mentioned, the Atlanta Hawks, they've made the playoffs, you know, a lot of years in a row now, but no one ever really thinks they're a chance to win the championship. And even people don't even really want to watch them in the past, because they haven't been an exciting thing to watch. But this year, you've got both of those. They're an exciting thing to watch, and I honestly feel they are, you know, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, the way they played the Golden State Warriors just before the All-Star break as well, it was a fantastic game. And, you know, the Warriors have been brilliant this year, but Atlanta Hawks, I mean, they outplayed them, and they deserve to win. So I would like to see, you know, the Hawks finally become legitimate contenders year in and year out, because, you know, that really hasn't happened since, I mean, maybe the Dominique days, I guess the early 90s, I had some good teams as well, but I don't know if they were really considered championship contenders. But, and even when you think of the Dominique Wilkins days, you know, that was against the Celtics and the Pistons, and the Bulls were coming up as well. So it was always tough then. This might be the best opportunity in franchise history to actually have some sustained success and be legitimate contenders for more than 1 year. So I hope we see it, and I hope they build on this, because if they go back to that cycle of just kind of turning up and making the playoffs, you know, it's going to be a sort of deflated feeling around the arena. And I've been to quite a few games down at Phillips Arena this year, and it's a great atmosphere. You know, just from last year when we first arrived down here, we went to games, and it was, you know, dull. It was dull. But now it's exciting. It's sold out. People are on their feet. People are cheering. It's really good. So I hope this continues.
Yeah, and so particularly considering where they were so recently, and I think that leads us to another team going over the Western Conference. I want to get into Golden State in a moment, though. I do kind of want to point out that, you know, listen, it was just, what, 3 years ago when they retired Chris Mullin's number and the owner got booed and everybody was furious with Golden State. Like, it wasn't very long ago that was happening. And but when you look at the Western Conference, one of the things that I thought was kind of fun after the trade deadline was you know, not that I think Phoenix was already considered the team that was least likely to make the playoffs. And I think with that trade, with their trades, I think they may have assured that, though I think helping them long term. One thing that was a relief for me, though, is one of the things you talked about earlier was if Phoenix made the playoffs, no one seriously thought they were going to have much of a chance to win the championship. Now it looks like all eight teams that are going to make the playoffs in the Western Conference can all legitimately claim that they've got at least a shot at it. Do you think that's right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you're the Golden State Warriors, you're 43-9 right now. You know, the best team in the league, probably got the MVP in Steph Curry. You know, beat the San Antonio Spurs last night, one of their sort of boogie teams that's, you know, always had their number and one of the only teams to win in Golden State this year. But if you're the Warriors and you've got to face Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka in that first round, I mean, you have home court advantage. But that is not the team you want to face. I mean, if you're the Warriors, you somehow want to face maybe the Clippers or the Mavericks because, you know, Dallas has been fantastic at times this year and they've still got Dirk Nowitzki. But, I mean, Durant and Westbrook are in their primes right now. You know, these guys, they started off slowly because they were both injured. But right now, these are the guys, Durant's the reigning MVP. And Westbrook, I mean, he could very well be the MVP this year as well. He has been very, very good for them. That is a awfully tough matchup for the Golden State Warriors. You know, this season it's been such a great storyline for them right now. You know, there's no guarantees they're getting out of that first round if they have to play them. And the San Antonio Spurs, I mean, they I mentioned they beat them last night, but again, you do not want to face San Antonio Spurs in the first round. Tim Duncan, doesn't matter how old he is, and Ginobili and Parker and those guys, Greg Popovich knows how to get his guys to play in a best of seven series, and we've seen it year in and year out. You know, you keep on thinking the Spurs are too old this year. They've got to have a drop off. And I mean, they're seventh in the conference right now at 34-21. But you would not think for one second that the Spurs are going to get swept or eliminated, you know, easily in a first round series. So it's so exciting and it's so open right now. You could lose a couple of games in the Western Conference and drop from maybe third to seventh. That's how tight it is. Between the teams there. And, you know, the Clippers have been good at times this year, but I don't think they're deep enough. The Houston Rockets, I mean, Dwight Howard, there's no telling exactly when he's going to be back. You know, it could be another 3 or 4 weeks. They're kind of treading water somewhat without him. James Harden, you know, another guy who's an MVP candidate for sure. He's been great for them. But the margin for error is so slight in the conference right now, and the matchups could change by just one or two games. It's very, very exciting. And any of those matchups right now, I mean, I'm just looking at it 1 through 8. You could easily pick the teams that are, you know, 5 through 8 to upset the teams 1 through 4, and it wouldn't be a huge surprise. So, I sort of can't wait. You know, we've still got about 30-odd games you will take until we get to the playoffs. But, man, this year's first round series are going to be so exciting.
See, and you know, I debated this with Tom Zeller at SB Nation. So he's a big proponent of the idea that they should reshuffle the playoffs and just have the top 16 teams run the Eastern Conference and Western Conference. I don't like that because I feel like it's kind of changing midstream. You know, I feel like it's just another thing that. I mean, listen, NBA teams, look at Philadelphia. They plan 4 or 5 years out ahead. To suddenly switch the rules on them in the middle of that seems to me unfair. And secondly, I think it ruins what is going to be an amazing first round in the Western Conference. Like the idea, like, I'm sorry, you're not going to tell me that it's going to be better if, okay, well, now, like, Golden State is going to face Oklahoma City, San Antonio, or Portland. In this new scenario, they're going to face Milwaukee. You know, or maybe Miami or Indiana or something. Yeah. Like that to me would take, or New Orleans, you know, I mean, like good matchups, but there's no good matchup for anyone in the Western Conference in the first round, which to me is awesome. Isn't that what you want?
Yeah, you do. I mean, the argument though back, which I, you know, tend to agree with about the taking the best 16 teams is right now you're going to have the Phoenix Suns who are 3 games over .500 and the New Orleans Pelicans who are at .500 missing out on the playoffs. When you've got Miami, who are 7 games below .500, and Charlotte, who are 8 games below .500 in the playoffs. And I think that some sort of balance needs to be restored there, because the thing with making the playoffs is it's revenue for your team, it's exposure. You can say to your season ticket holders, hey, we made the playoffs last year. It's more attractive to free agents. You can say, listen, we made the playoffs last year. Whereas the Phoenix Suns, I mean, like last year, they could finish potentially maybe 10 games over .500 and miss the playoffs. And I think that needs to be corrected somewhat, because I don't think if you're making your playoffs and you're, you know, perhaps 8 games below .500, whereas a team 10 games over is missing out. I don't think that's the fairest way to do it. I think there needs to be some sort of way to make it so that you have to reach some certain goal, at least be 500 or over to make a playoff, if teams missing that are missing out are over 500. Because, you know, it's the old conferences and divisions, I don't think the same rivalry exists as it used to now. Because if you win your division, and the thing is, you know, coming from Toronto where I did, they've got two Atlantic Division banners that hang in the Air Canada Centre. And honestly, it just doesn't mean anything to me. Like, who cares if you win your Atlantic Division title when you get knocked out of the playoffs in the first round, which has happened that both years they've won their division. You know, it doesn't. The only thing that really matters is winning championships. And you've got to put the best teams who have had the most success throughout the regular season, I believe, in the chance to win the playoffs. Because I don't think making the playoffs should be determined by a geographical location. It should be determined by how many regular season wins you have. And if you have more than a team that is in the playoffs, and that team has far less wins than you, I think there's something needs to be done there. Because, you know, you are kind of, I mean, it's not like you're rewarding failure, but you're sort of sending a bit of a mixed message as well. And you're saying, well, just because you happen to reside in this side of the country, that means that you miss out on the playoffs, even though you had a much better record than a team that resides on the other side of the country. So,
but you don't just happen to be on the other side of the country. Well, like, you're there on the side of the country, and you've been there forever. Yeah. So, like, therefore, you know the rules going in. Like, you know, and if you want to get rid of conferences altogether and just have one big thing of 30 teams, and everybody just, like, we just rank them like they used to do in baseball, and just 1 to 30, and this is the way it works, then I get it. But the idea, like, if you're going to ignore the conferences for the playoffs, then you should just ignore the conferences.
Yeah, well, again, this is something that I've talked about on our show. I actually personally would get rid of the conferences because, again, I think that nowadays with travel, and Adam Silver mentioned this as well, like, you don't want Portland versus Miami in the first round, because that would be enormously stressful on the players traveling back and forth across the country. I totally get that. But at the same time, I always refer back to a tournament like tennis. And the way the tennis is set up is, you know, the better you are, the less likely you have to face someone who's good until you get to those further rounds. So if you qualify in tennis as a qualifier or a wild card, chances are you're not very good, so you have to play someone who's very good. When you have proven over a lot of years, or, you know, in basketball terms, over the regular season, that you are the better team, you shouldn't have to face someone who's a tougher opponent if there are weaker opponents there, if you know what I mean. Like, I like the way March Madness is set up as well. You know, like, the number one generally shouldn't face off against the number three in the second round or anything like that. You know, it's harder for you to get through and navigate that through that conference if you are a team that's come from, you know, without having a proven success of winning throughout the season. Again, I don't think it matters. And Greg Popovich is always the sort of guy that I use in this respect. You can win your conference and you get the T-shirts and the champagne and, you know, you're popping all the corks and that. But you know what? If you win your conference and then you go out in the finals and lose, not one person ever talks about saying, oh, yeah, but we won the Western Conference this year. Because it doesn't really matter. You didn't win the championship. You know, no one really celebrates those championships or those conferences in the same way they do the championships. You don't see a guy wearing a T-shirt saying, hey, we won the Western Conference even though we lost in the finals. So I think the biggest prize should be set up so that the best teams throughout the regular season have the best chance of winning regardless of where they're located and where they're from. And it's not easy because the way it's set up right now in the Western Conference, you play with those teams in the West more than you play the teams in the East. So the regular season schedule would have to be altered as well for that, so that it's even. I don't think there's one clear answer for it right now, but I definitely feel that the Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets should not be playing in the playoffs when they are well below 500, when teams that are at or over 500 are missing out. And that I think is something that Adam Silver is probably going to try to address. Although he mentioned he wants to keep the divisions as well. He wants to keep, you know, the three division winners go through and then perhaps taking the best 10 teams from wherever they're from. So the change, I think, is coming, and it's probably going to take a couple of years to figure out exactly the best way to do it. And there's probably going to be times where people say, oh, this is crazy, this doesn't work. And we may have a scenario where the Blazers have to take on the Miami Heat or something like that. But I still think if that gets us closer to the best teams playing for the championship based on the regular season record, I think that is still the best approach to take.
All right, well, I guess I'm not gonna. I don't remember a time in NBA history where we're like, oh man, that team would have totally won the title if they had just snuck in the playoffs. Like, I don't know if that's ever happened. But listen, yeah. I'm on the wrong side of history on this. I also wish they. I don't know why they had to take the bottom out of the basket. Like, I liked it much better when it was made of wood and you got in the ladder and you got the ball out. So.
Yeah, but, and you know what, like, you know, there are other traditions, of course, and I get that as well. Like, something even as simple as a three-point shootout at the NBA All-Star Weekend when they added the Moneyball rack last year, you know, some people are like, nah, we don't need to mess with it. It's not broken. Don't try to fix it or improve it. And I was one of those at the start. I was like, we don't need to change anything. But then once I saw it and once I saw how exciting it was, for me, it was like that was actually a really good improvement that they made. They added something extra to the three-point shootout. Now, that's a very, very minor thing when you're comparing it to playoffs and conferences and things like that. But at the same time, I think there's always that resistance to change when it's major until you actually see it in action. You go, okay, maybe that was right. And you know, you're right. Like the teams that make the act, like the Pelicans, let's say the Pelicans and the Suns did make the playoffs. Well, you're right, they're probably not going to win the championship, but I can guarantee the Hornets and the Miami Heat are certainly not going to win the championship either, and they're going to be in the playoffs. So I would like to just see, you know, your regular season record given if you have done well throughout the regular season and you've had more wins than another team, then I think you at least deserve a chance to be in the playoffs. But you know, there's no right or... right answer right now. I think it's all about trying to find the right formula and trying to get teams to at least make sure the schedule is even in the first place, and then you can maybe change things from there. But either way, I think Adam Silver is going to make a change in the next couple of years at some point.
All right, last question before I let you go, and then we do our trivia. And I'm just going to put you on the spot. Who's going to play in the finals and who's going to win?
I am going to say... I'm going to say the Warriors out in the West, and I'm going to say the Cavaliers in the East. And this is great because I just don't know, but I'll say the fairy tale continues for the Warriors, and they win it. They're going to have home court advantage, and they win in seven games against the Cavaliers.
Oh, that would be so awesome, and that Oracle Arena would be. Like people, oh man, like it's funny. Like even when the Warriors weren't that great, that place was nuts, particularly in the playoffs. So the idea of this team doing that is, I get excited just thinking about it.
You know, because the thing is, I actually feel again looking at it, I think the Warriors' toughest round could be their first round. You know, against the Thunder or the Spurs. If they get past that, then they might face someone like Houston, who I think they could defeat Houston. And then they might play Memphis is the dark horse team, if you can be a dark horse at the second seed in the Western Conference, because they've got everything. They've got the defense. They've got the continuity of players in Randolph, Gasol, and Mike Conley. They've added Jeff Green. I think Dave Yeager's done a fantastic job. They are a very, very good team. But I just think if the Warriors can escape that first round, I think they've got too much firepower, and they play defense, and they've got that home court advantage. And I guess, you know, the other thing is I kind of want the Warriors to be not just that regular season fairy tale, because in the past the Warriors have been in the playoffs and they've upset, you know, like the Mavs in 2007, if you go back to 91 when they beat the Spurs, 89 they beat the Utah Jazz in the first round. They've kind of been that team that's shocked in the first round, and then they kind of they haven't been able to sort of capitalize on that and go further. So I hope this year, finally, the Warriors can actually really make a drive and get to the conference finals at least, and then maybe go on to win the championship. That would be great.
I find myself cheering for them and the Hawks, really, in the way that I used to work for the, I used to cheer for the D'Antoni Suns teams. Like, I just want to see, like, this thing that's really exciting can become, get rid of the Barclays that are like, that doesn't work in the playoffs, and so on, and just like, you know what I mean? I find myself cheering for both of those teams for specifically that reason.
Yeah, I mean, those D'Antoni Suns are a great example, you know, because Amari and Steve Nash and Sean Marion and, you know, Rajah Bell and those guys, they just get out there and make basketball so much fun to watch, and you wanted to see that there was not just style, it was substance below that, and you know, they kind of had that. They had some unlucky things happen in the playoffs, obviously against the Spurs. We know about the famous suspension there. I mean, that's not the only reason they didn't go on to win the championship, obviously, but it, you just felt that that sort of team, that style, that's what people want to watch. They want to see the running and the gunning and the three-point shooting and all those sorts of things they did. And if they can win the championship, then they can prove that that model still does work. But, yeah, history says you need to be a better defensive team to win in the playoffs. And you know, again, coming back to the Warriors, they have proven so far that they are as good defensively as they are offensively. So you feel that this could actually work for them this year. But, man, it's going to be fun.
It's going to be so fun. All right, well, thanks, man. Thank you for coming on. Everyone, make sure to watch the starters on NBA TV. Or if Charter Communication doesn't get you NBA TV, just listen to the podcast like I do. And then when it sounds like Taz is starting to do highlights, just skip ahead a little bit because you can't see the highlights and listen to the show that way. But Lee, thank you so much for coming on. I'm a huge fan, and it's an honor to have you as always.
My pleasure. Well, anytime, I'm available.
Okay, we're going to have Lee stick around and do some trivia with us for the next show. But for now, definitely follow him on Twitter at Lee Ellis, LeeIghellis. And, of course, watch the starters or subscribe to the podcast or both. So thank you. Everyone, have a wonderful week. We'll be back on Monday with the trivia podcast later this week, but back on Monday with a new podcast of another insightful guest like Lee. All right, take care. I'll see you at the podcast. I'll see you at the trivia podcast. All right, see you.